Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 304 of Geek Town Radio. I am back this week with Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good, David. How are you?
I'm good. We're back after a couple of weeks off. I went travelling a bit around the UK, which was quite fun, and sort of went to London and went to Liverpool, and had quite a pleasant time. So it's been good visiting a few different places and actually getting out of my house, having been here basically for 18 months. How have you been, and what have you been watching?
Been all right. Been busy with all my podcasts and stuff, done a bunch of stuff as well. Things that I've watched and podcasted on and not podcasted on as well. Something which I thoroughly enjoyed and I've been singing the praises of on social media is Black Summer Season 2.
Yes.
Which I did a review for recently. I've been posting it on Twitter and I got a couple of little responses from Jamie King, who's one of the actresses in the show. She plays the main character, which is the mother, because you've got like the mother and the daughter.
Yeah.
That are sort of the main two characters. I don't think she listened to the podcast, but in the title I put that I think it's TV's best zombie show, and she was like, thank you so much, and like, that's all great and everything. And just in various different comment sections where she's talked about Black Summer, and obviously she shared a few little like behind the scenes photos of like different set things and stuff, and I was like putting in the comments about like, oh yeah, this scene was really really tense because like the whole season was, and she sort of liked a couple of comments, so you know, some nice little interactions. Aww. Here and there.
Yeah.
But the interactions I've had with her have been great, and she retweeted the review, which was good. And
excellent.
Overall, it's just, you know, my interactions with her and the show itself, the second season, was phenomenal. I was on the edge of my seat for the whole thing. One of the main things that really separates Black Summer from things like Fear the Walking Dead and The Walking Dead and even like Z Nation and other stuff like that is, as much as I love The Walking Dead, which we both do, we both podcast on it and everything, Black Summer's got this particular way of, okay, you know who the main characters are supposed to be, but whenever they get into any confrontation, whether it's with a person that's fighting for supplies or a zombie that's running after them, I never ever feel like the characters are safe. And sometimes with The Walking Dead, you'll have somebody like Rosita, who's okay, she's not a Daryl or a Rick or like a really top tier like a Michonne or somebody like that, but she's kind of an important character. But sometimes if a sort of slightly not top tier Walking Dead character gets into a confrontation, you feel like, okay, they'll probably be fine. And I know that, you know, with Walking Dead, it's based off the comic material and they follow some of that and then change some of it as well. So I know it's a bit of a different beast, but it's just that horror tension that sometimes The Walking Dead does really lack. And there's a whole episode in there between Spears, who is one of the main characters, and this like long lost friend that he kind of meets. And throughout the episode, you're thinking like one of these two might just kill the other one, or a bunch of zombies might come out of the woods, or like they're really low on supplies and what's going to happen with that. And sometimes with things like The Walking Dead, it does do these big scale war sort of set pieces. Black Summer's got one of them at the start of the second season, but most of the whole show, the first season included, is kind of bottle episodes, but they're so tension filled and it's often between a few characters where you really don't know who's going to turn on who or who's going to get shot or whatever. And it's just so tension filled, and I absolutely loved it. It left me a bit tired after watching it, bit like mentally sort of tired of thinking like, wow, that was, you know, sort of really tense. But I wanted to feel that way, if that makes sense, because that's how I felt the show wanted me to feel, and it worked. So have you seen any of Black Summer? It's absolutely fantastic.
I think I may have watched the first episode of the first season and I enjoyed it, actually. I just didn't kind of get back to it and other things got in the way. I like some of the zombie genre stuff. Horror's not really a huge thing for me. I'm not as massively into it as you are. So it's not sort of the natural thing that I would usually go and watch. But, you know, I do obviously watch The Walking Dead and I do enjoy that. And I did quite enjoy the first episode of it. I just haven't kind of got back to watching the rest of it. In terms of the character stuff, though, I think possibly part of the thing that Black Summer has going for it is the fact that it isn't The Walking Dead and it is a smaller show. And the Walking Dead, you know, like you say, some people know some of what's possibly coming up because of the comic book, even though they have remixed quite a lot of that. When big characters leave, we tend to know about that coming up beforehand. So that sort of removes the tension. We also know certain characters like Carol and Daryl have got to stay around because we know they've got another show coming off. So we know they can't be in jeopardy. So there are certain things with The Walking Dead that we kind of know. And yes, they do kill characters off and sometimes they are shocking, but I think there's less of it because the show's so big that a lot of the stuff gets out in the press beforehand, you know. Whereas with something like Black Summer, I think it does have the advantage of being a smaller show, and if you like it and you are invested in it, they can kill off characters left, right, etc. if they want, without it kind of getting leaked to the same extent, which is probably an advantage to them. But I'm glad it's doing so well for them, because it was a good little zombie show. It's from the people that did Z Nation as well, isn't it?
Yeah, which is strange because this is completely different to, like, Z Nation is this sort of like fun, kind of silly, not stupid, but like the silly version of zombie stuff where it would be more comedy based. This is like a complete 180 where it's still like dark, it's grounded, gritty, tension filled, a bit like a sort of, you know, Quiet Place or Last of Us type stuff where it's very just sort of, this character's gonna die and we don't care what you think.
Yeah.
Deal with it kind of thing. So it's really good. But like stunt work's fantastic as well. There's a few things in like the first couple of episodes and the last couple of episodes that are great. And you know that thing I talk about where like you're watching an episode of TV and it suddenly ends and the credits come up? That happened with like every episode.
Yeah.
And I know the episodes are a little bit shorter sometimes, but that happened with all of them. So it was a fantastic show as well. And thanks to Jamie King for being very nice as well. So
because not all
celebrities are nice, are they?
Well, so,
not all people are very nice.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
But that's been great as well. So I don't know about season three, but we'll see. Switching over to video games, I'm playing currently Mafia 1. It got remastered along with the whole trilogy. There's Mafia 1, 2, and 3. Which are from the Xbox 360 PS3 era. I did, just after high school when I was at college, I remember playing Mafia 2 around a friend's house on the Xbox 360, and that was great. But I played the second, and I didn't play all of the third one because it was unbelievably repetitive and
quite bad. Yes, it was.
It's a shame for that game because I kind of agree with the general consensus, which is the narrative is really, really strong and really great, but the gameplay is unbelievably repetitive. Playing the first one, I've never experienced any of the first one. I have got the whole trilogy sort of on me. I've rented it and stuff, so I didn't know anything about the story or anything. It is a kind of, you know, normal mafia story of, hey, you're in this group and don't get the cops on us, and, you know, let's get what we need from these other people, you know, that kind of normal mafia storyline. The technical aspects of the game are really, really good. It runs really well. Cutscenes are very good. The gameplay is interesting. It's kind of like strange in a certain way, but when you kind of get used to that, I really like the way that the enemies react to the way that you sort of shoot them. Like, because not every game sort of does things like that. Like, if you shoot them in the leg, or they'll sort of react differently as opposed to just being a sort of hit point, if that makes sense. It's a little bit tough to get used to at first, the gameplay, but I've sort of got into a good rhythm of knowing how it plays and that, and it's pretty good. I'm having a good time with it so far. The cars control a little bit strangely as well. Obviously, they're from, I think it's the 1930s, so obviously the cars are different to what they are today. Again, once you get used to the way the cars kind of control and the certain ways that you can turn around corners without driving into the wall, is very good. So it's a really good game so far. I'm enjoying it. I think I've played it for about, say about 6 hours roughly so far, maybe a little bit more. I don't know how long is left, but story's picking up really good. It's got some interesting characters. Just a good time. You sound like you're quite familiar with these games. Then.
Yes, I am. I have played all three. I, like you, played the third one a little bit and then thought this is getting horribly repetitive. The first one I played when it originally came out, I haven't played the remaster version, so I am very familiar with that first game. My overriding memory of that first game, there is a sequence with a race car, I seem to remember, which you may not have got to yet if you've only been playing with 6 hours, which was horrifically difficult to control. And I'd be interested to see when you get to that, how easy that race bit is in the remaster version, whether they've managed to sort that out.
Are you talking about the race that you have to win?
Yes, there is a race. There's a race in a race car that you have to win. And that was horrifically difficult on the original game, as I seem to remember. So not because it was a difficult race to win, but because the controlling that car was incredibly hard. So I don't know whether they've managed to improve or sort that out for the remastered version.
It seemed all right to me. I mean, the car that you use at that point is different to kind of anything that you've used, obviously, because it's a specific type of car. It was a case for me of learning, okay, this car can go really ridiculously fast, but you've got to just kind of learn how to slow down for the corners, otherwise you'll crash and then you'll just lose the whole thing. So
I remember that being horrifically hard on the original game, and I remember reading somewhere, I think they had done some tweaks to that to make it slightly easier than it was. But overall, I really like the storyline on the first Mafia game. They do continue a bits of that storyline in the second game, from what I remember. There's certain, you're playing a different lead character, but some of the other characters kind of pop up in the second game. The third game, I think they drop the ball a bit and it ends up just being very, very repetitive, unfortunately. I would like to see them do a fourth game, just which focused more on single player story and had a solid kind of background, because I think that was the problem with the third one, was there was a lot of busy work with it and it just ended up with being not that interesting as a game. And I would like to I would like it to be more of a sort of GTA, but you know, with that level of sort of GTA 5 story, but set in a mafia world, would be quite a nice way of doing it. But we'll see where they go with whether they do any more. But you know, the fact that they've remastered this trilogy kind of points towards maybe they are considering doing something more with it. But
I think it's almost a bit of a taster of like, okay, we'll put these games out there again for people that missed them, or just for the new console generations and that, and see like how they do and stuff. So out of the three of them, I do think Mafia 2 is still the best one, but that's kind of from from memory that I've played of it. So really enjoyed the first one. So two other shows I wanted to kind of talk about as well. Love, Victor, which has been going on for its second season. It's only about 4 episodes in. It felt like it had gotten further into the season just because so much has kind of happened and stuff.
Yeah.
Really, really good season of TV. Really kind of hits me emotionally, as I'm sure it does with some others. One of the interesting aspects of season 2, I can't talk about too much because of like spoilers and stuff, but basically Victor is having a bit of a conflict with his mum at the moment. There's a there's a particular reason that is led on from the first season, but I can't talk about what that is. And I find that quite interesting. You could look at that one way, or you could maybe look at it another way. And I think it's this very just particular thing they've chosen for that character that is turning out to be quite interesting. But I can't really talk about exactly why that is the way that is and everything. Yeah, it's been fantastic. The episodes are very short, again, just sort of over before I realize or whatever. I can't talk about too much of why season 2's so good and why the character dynamics are so interesting, because of, again, spoilers and things, but it's doing some very cool, interesting stuff. Have you seen any of that at all?
I haven't, no. It's one that's on my long list of things that I need to get to, but I know you and Gray both really love that series, and it's been going down very well, so that's good.
Yeah. Is the film on Star? Because you've got Love, Simon.
No, the film doesn't look like it is. It's available to buy on like Sky Store for like $3.50, and it's on Amazon for $2.50. And so the film is, it's on YouTube as well for like $3.50. So I mean, it is kicking around on various platforms if you want to go and buy it. or rent cool. it. Sorry, cool. Those are the rental prices. It's $7.99 if you want to buy it. It is around if you want to watch the movie. But I'm told you don't need to watch the movie to watch Love, Victor particularly.
Yeah, I think you could probably skip the film for now and then like binge the series or whatever. There's various different references to Simon, and now and again Victor will like call or message Simon for different advice and things like that. And I think he made an appearance, I think towards the end of season one or something. So he did make like a cameo appearance, which was good. So but very, very good show as well. And then lastly, switching over to Apple TV Plus, I finished C, the first season of that, the Jason Momoa show. I really, really enjoyed that a lot. I just think the concept was really fascinating to me. And as I was kind of watching it and watching the various different like scenes that are in the woods, I kept thinking of The 100 because it kind of gave me a little bit of that feeling. 100, if you know, made everybody older and then half the characters or most of the characters were blind and stuff. There's some really good like action set pieces and things. Obviously they can't like see the enemy, so they have to use sound and stuff. I noticed with Jason's character, Jason Momoa, who plays the main character, it's when he like taps on trees with these swords and stuff and he like tricks the other enemies. And there's a particular scene, I think in like episode 4 or 5, where a bunch of people are like captured and he's tapping his sword and like scraping it along the ground and everything. I think, you know, you might know which scene I'm referring to. I thought a lot of that work was fantastic, and I can't really think of many shows that have done that type of concept before, at least not to, obviously you've got things like Daredevil, which is sort of similar, but obviously that's like comic book sort of stuff. But no, I found the concept to be really interesting. I did find the dialogue at certain points to be a bit just strange and hard to keep up with, just because the way that some characters speak. But I got a good gist of what was going on and everything. But I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I got through the, I think it's 8 episodes, wasn't it? I'm looking forward to season 2 next month, isn't it?
So. What 27th of August for the next season of C, and it's already been renewed for a third season as well. I really enjoyed the first season. It's a little slow to get going, and there is a huge difference between that first episode and the second episode as well, because the first episode doesn't have some of the main characters, because it's almost a kind of prequel to what the main story is, that first episode. So it is a bit of an odd setup when they first start, but I think it gives a nice solid foundation of sort of introducing what the world is at that point. And there's an interesting mix of characters, there's an interesting mix of these couple of different stories of going on, of this kind of mad crazy queen on one side, and then you've got the story of these two sighted children of Baba Voss, which is Jason Momoa's character, although they're not really his children, he's sort of adopted them and he's looking after them, but they actually have their natural father was also supposedly this sort of sighted person, and that's who they end up going on in a sort of adventure to go and find him. It's from Stephen Knight, who is the person behind Peaky Blinders. It has a very much a sort of, you know, you mentioned the 100, it's not as sort of teen drama-y as something like the 100. It's much more in the sort of more adult vein of something like Peaky Blinders, but it's this interesting, different sort of world. You know, as you say, the set pieces are great. They're having to think around sort of how, if somebody was blind, would they fight in a world where everybody essentially is blind? You know, how would they manage? How would they cope? They come up with some really interesting thoughts and ideas about how to deal with that. That goes through to the production design, the costuming. I've spoke to some of the people that are involved on behind the scenes as well, and it's just really fascinating, that entire world that they've created. So I'm very much looking forward to the second season coming next month. You know, I'm glad it's already got picked up for a third season as well. It's one of those solid Apple TV shows, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. The other part I really liked as well was, you know, that bit on the boat where they're like getting shot out with arrows and stuff. That was really good. So yeah, just loads of good action set pieces. So that was good.
Yeah, definitely. I finished another Apple TV show this week as well. Mythic Quest. I got to the end of the second season and thoroughly enjoyed that. I think that ends in a really really interesting place and set things up for another season. I mean, you could potentially end it there if you wanted to, because it does kind of wrap up one story arc. It hasn't yet been renewed for a third season, but I mean, I would imagine that there is a good chance that that will come back as well. Although if it didn't, if for whatever reason they decided not to bring it back, I think it does end it in a place where you could sort of leave them and, you know, let it stop there if they wanted to. But I would be very interested to see where they come back with for that.
Yeah, very, very good second season. It's a show I really enjoy as well. As the finale was sort of going on, I was like, oh, okay, this is going in like a strange direction. Mm-hmm. I kind of wonder, like, you could do a third season, but it would be a bit like separated, I suppose. So I'm not sure how you'd fix that.
Yeah, Rob McElhenney, who is the main person behind that from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia as well, has said that he hasn't actually come up with an idea for season three yet. So that's why it's not actually been renewed. I think Apple would take it if and when they kind of get the idea for it, but he hasn't actually decided where they're going for it. That was from an interview he did that was at the end of June. So, you know, maybe there'll be a bit of a break and maybe it'll come back again next year, but they haven't actually kind of decided what they're doing with that yet. And they've not officially got a renewal, but if they've not pitched any ideas for season three to Apple yet, then that's probably why it hasn't got a renewal yet. So we'll see. But I mean, the second season does end it in a very satisfying way. And it's hilariously funny, that show. It's really, really good. So I'm thoroughly enjoying the first two seasons of that. And that's on Apple TV. Monsters at Work, I know you've been watching this, which is the Monsters, Inc. spin-off, which takes place directly after the movie. Because the movie, for those who haven't seen Monsters, Inc., spoilers for the end of the film. But God, how long's that been now?
20 years old.
Yeah, 20 years old. But, obviously the entire thing with the end of Monsters, Inc. is the fact that the Monster Town is powered by screams of children or the scares of children. And the idea is that they find that laughs are far better ways of powering things. So by the end of the movie, they switch over to laughs. And what you do with Monsters at Work is you start with a guy who's like literally just graduated from Monsters University and graduated like top of his class of the scare course. And he's going to be kind of going to be a scarer just on the day where they're switching everything over from scaring to collecting laughs instead. So obviously his scaring is kind of no use to anybody, but he has got a job at Monsters, Inc., which is his sort of dream job. And it's about him dealing with this transition from one to the other. And it's got Mike and Sully in there as well, who are now in charge of Monsters, Inc. They've kind of taken over the company. So it's literally starting the next day after the end of the film. And I've only watched the opening episode. There are a couple of episodes out already, but I've only watched the opening one so far. But I really enjoyed that. I thought it was a lovely continuation of it, and it introduced some great new characters. You're doing a podcast on this, aren't you? So
yeah, it's called Funny Monsters, which Sully actually says that in, I think, the first episode.
Yeah.
So it's quite fitting. Very, very good start. Monsters, Inc. is something I'm quite nostalgic for. Not quite on the level of like a Toy Story, but it's still very much got that sort of 90s-ish nostalgia for me, which is great. My one kind of concern was, are Mike and Sully, who are two characters I very much care about, and are Monsters, Inc., are they going to get enough screen time? And they seem to, they've got a balancing act on their hands now, which is you've got Tyler, who's the main character, and then Mike and Sully. And it seems to be all about, can we get to the, I guess they're calling it the laugh floor now or whatever.
Yeah.
And sort of trying to get in there, which is where Mike and Sully are. And then obviously you've got Tyler, who's in the maintenance room or whatever it is with the others. So, but I like it. I thought it was a very good start. So looking forward to some more of it. And they should only be like 20 minute episodes. In fact, the end of the second episode, when the credits came up, it said 18 minutes.
Right.
So they're very short episodes.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Yeah, I am enjoying it. And I get what you're saying about Mike and Sully. It's Billy Crystal and John Goodman back doing the voices for those, but they are kind of in as secondary characters rather than being the main focal characters. You know, it's Tyler, who is this newly graduated scarer who's ended up being placed in the maintenance area because of of the fact that, you know, he's scaring is not really needed right now. So there is a bit of a balancing act, but it's nice that they haven't completely abandoned Mike and Sully and they are sort of still around in there. So that's good.
I suppose it's like with Toy Story 4 when you introduced Forky and then you still had Buzz and Woody and obviously like Jesse and all the others.
Yeah.
And how do you put that important new character into the group, which they managed very well in Toy Story 4.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm enjoying that. I will go and watch the rest of it. I only had time to watch one episode so far, so I will go and watch the rest of that because I am a fan of the Monsters, Inc. franchise. So that's been good. Over on Amazon, I started watching through Clarkson's Farm, which, if you haven't seen this, it's obviously Jeremy Clarkson. He lives on a estate in Oxfordshire that has 1,000 acres of farmland attached to it. And the idea is the manager of the farmland bit of it has decided to retire. And Clarkson being Clarkson and the fact that they've changed the format of Grand Tour, so they're doing specials rather than doing like a one big show. And he's obviously got things like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire as well that he's doing. But because of sort of that sort of stuff, he decided that, you know, maybe he's got the time to actually become a farmer and manage the farm himself, and then got Amazon involved to make a year-long film of him becoming the manager of the farm. So that's essentially what it is. And I mean, it is a show about farming. It's called Diddley Squat Farm, the farm that was, he renamed it Diddley Squat Farm. It's about him managing that farmland and actually doing the farm work himself and how he copes as being a farmer, essentially. I never really thought I'd find myself watching a show about farming, but it is wildly entertaining. And I mean, part of that will be whether you can stand Jeremy Clarkson or not. And I entirely understand people that can't. Whilst I disagree politically quite a lot with Jeremy Clarkson, I think he's really interesting and entertaining to watch. And you find out quite a lot about how the farming industry works in a very sort of entertaining way. The amount of work that they have to go through, which I think also kind of surprised Jeremy as well. And he does genuinely put himself fully into it. There are some great other characters along. There's Gerald, who is the kind of construction guy who is very, very difficult to understand. He has a very, very strong local Chippendorton accent and you can't understand a word he's saying. So he's quite entertaining. There's Caleb, who is the young farmhand who is in his early 20s, but he's way, way more experienced than Jeremy. So that's a really interesting connection between the two of them and to see them bounce off each other. There's Charlie, who is, Clarkson describes as cheerful Charlie, because he always turns up with horrendous news about sort of what they need to do and the rules and regulations, because obviously there are a ton of rules and regulations when you're growing food. There's Lisa, who is Clarkson's long-suffering girlfriend, who assists with the farm as well. So this is a really interesting, lovely bunch of people that you know, he's got surrounding, a great bunch of characters that are involved in the show as well. I was really surprised how much I enjoyed this, and I do wonder whether they're going to do another season of it or whether Clarkson kind of gives up, because it's not entirely clear whether he's actually continued on as running and managing that himself or whether he's going to pay somebody to kind of do it from now on. They kind of leave that a little ambiguous at the end. So there is potential for another season of this. But yeah, I don't know. I thought, as it certainly is a one-off thing, it works really, really well. I don't know how well a second season would work, because you'd have to come up with more and more ridiculous things for him to get up to. Whereas I think this felt relatively genuine throughout most of it, because I mean, the thing with stuff like Top Gear and the Grand Tour, there are certain things in there that feel set up. And with most of this, it didn't. You know, it felt relatively genuine. There are a couple of points where you can tell that Jeremy's done something purely because he either thinks it'll be funny or he knows it'll make good TV. But there are a number of points throughout this where it does feel like he's genuinely either screwed something up and it's just gone horribly wrong, or he's just just having to deal with things like the weather and dealing with machinery that, you know, he's never had to deal with before and all that sort of stuff. So it's really entertaining. And even if you're not into farming, if you're into those sort of shows like Top Gear and The Grand Tour and you like that sort of humour, it is filmed in very much that sort of style. So I would say it is worth a watch, definitely. I mean, again, it does come down to how much you can stand Jeremy Clarkson or not, I guess. But I think worth watching though, definitely. The other thing that I watched while I was off was Black Widow, which is the long, long delayed MCU movie, which stars Scarlett Johansson reprising her role as Black Widow, who of course is no longer around. So it is a prequel and it's sort of her background and her history. It's a nice send off for that character, I think, and introduces some more people who you can potentially use further down the line, which is quite good. It's in that sort of middle ground of MCU movies. It's not up there with something ridiculously fun like Thor Ragnarok. It's not up to the level of something like Endgame, but I think what is at this point. Yeah. It's a perfectly decent, functional, entertaining action movie in the MCU. It's kind of what you would expect from this sort of film. As I say, I think it introduces some characters which we're going to see again later on, and they can use at other points when they want to. It was fine, I think, as a film. I enjoyed it. I mean, I rented it off Disney Plus. I didn't go to the cinema to go and see it. I decided I was going to do it from home on the Premiere Access thing on Disney Plus. But yeah, I enjoyed it though. I thought it was fine, you know. So have you seen this yet?
Yeah, I really, really liked Black Widow. I think I even like it more now than what I did when I reviewed it. And I don't think some people realize what Marvel's doing now that we've gotten into this new era of like post Thanos, and we're not in the, is it called the Infinity Saga?
Yeah.
We're not in that anymore. And we're kind of, I don't know how many people realize this, but the Avengers are being rebuilt. That's why we've got all these new shows of like Miss Marvel and we've got a new Hawkeye coming through, and we've got the Ironheart series. Now we've got a new Black Widow with the Elena and everything. And then obviously we've got new Captain America with Sam and everything. So the Avengers are being rebuilt, and I find that very exciting as well. Mm-hmm. And this just goes to push that further along, but with the Black Widow side of things. Also the post credit scene, I won't talk about it here, but I thought that was fantastic. I really like what that set up for something else later down the line, which the Marvel films tend to do that. I was like, hey, here's a little breadcrumb of a post credit scene that will set something up. But for the most part, Marvel's been very, very good at doing that. And just with this particular thing, it kind of reinvigorated my excitement for that spy sort of side. I remember when we talked about, I think it was me, you and Robert that talked about Falcon and Winter Soldier. And I think I said at the time that I'm just so much more invested in the multiverse because of like what WandaVision did and everything.
Yeah.
But I think what they set up with Black Widow kind of got me excited again for that spy side of things. I can't tell you why here, but I think you know kind of what I mean and how that will link into other things in the future. I really like what they did with that. And we're just really liking what the MCU is doing at the moment.
Yeah, I think they are doing a great job. I was very, very happy with the post-credit scene as well. I thought that set up something very, very interesting. Obviously, we're not going to go into spoilers here because that'd be unfair on people that haven't seen it. But it does set up an interesting thing in the post-credit scene for that. And it's nice to see an MCU film back and the post-credit scenes back as well. As I say, I thought it was fine. I wouldn't go overboard about it, but I certainly enjoyed it. And I think it is a solid MCU movie. And it is worth getting and watching, definitely. There's some great performances in there, particularly from Scarlett Johansson, who's a sort of swan song as Romanoff, and introducing Florence Pugh as Yelena, who seems to be setting up to be kind of the new Black Widow. That's not really giving anything away. That's been pretty much obvious. David Harbour, I think, was great as Red Guardian as well. I thought that was wonderful. And just the sort of ego on that. So I thought they were great characters, and I do hope we see some more of those later on as well. Obviously, Scarlett Johansson, I think he's probably done with the MCU at this point, but Florence Pugh, I think he's going to be interesting moving forward, and I would love to see David Harbour again because I thought he was great.
Hey, it's about kind of we're in a new era, we've got to move on from certain characters and then set up new ones. So
absolutely. So that's all the stuff we've been watching over the last few weeks. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
Bye. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
TV and film news, we kick off with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. We have a number of cancellations, one which I was a bit gutted about. Cursed, they've cancelled at Netflix after one season, which was that sort of reworking of the Arthur tale. I kind of knew this was coming because it's been a year since the first season was out, so it was fairly obvious that this wasn't going to be coming back. But I'm kind of sad to see this go, because I did enjoy the first season of that, and I thought it set up an interesting and different world. I guess it was just too expensive for the numbers that it got, possibly, but I'm sad not to see that come back.
It was sort of to the point where, like, okay, we haven't heard anything about Cursed in about a year, and that's probably not a good sign.
Yes, so, exactly.
Yeah, when news for not just the Netflix show but any show gets that quiet for that long, you kind of think, okay, there isn't really anything moving forward.
Even if there's a 2 year break, usually you'll hear somewhere in that first 12 months of, oh yeah, it has been renewed, we're just, you know, not filming it yet for X reasons, you know.
But no, I enjoyed the first season, but it's sad to see that go.
It's a shame that's not coming back. Good Witch has also been cancelled. This is Netflix over here, but it's not Netflix that's cancelled it, it's Hallmark. So that's been cancelled after seven seasons. Hallmark make it in the US and it runs on Netflix over here. So that's not coming back after seven seasons. Lovecraft Country has been cancelled at HBO. I didn't actually watch this, but it felt to me like something that would probably have worked as a limited series. I kind of got that impression, but I haven't watched it, so I don't know whether that is the case. I'm assuming it didn't leave it on some huge cliffhanger, but that is not coming back after the... Did you watch any of that?
I watched about 10 minutes of the first episode, got very, very confused, and then I thought, okay, I'll go back to this, because I'd heard so many good things about it just over and over again. I was going to go and give it another chance, and now it got cancelled anyway. It's odd, because I actually watched about 10 minutes of it, and I still don't really know much about it. Is that based off like a book or something?
It's not, I don't think, specifically based off a book. It's sort of based around some of the ideas from H.P. Lovecraft, who was a famous horror writer. There was apparently a second season in development, but they scrapped it earlier this month at HBO for whatever reason. But so there was apparently a second season in development. So it's a shame. But the first season's out there. It sounds like it was probably more of an anthology thing, given that the second season was supposed to be called Lovecraft Country Supremacy. So I'm guessing the first season wraps up okay, although I haven't seen it, so I don't know. And the other thing which was cancelled was Good Girls, which I don't think had been cancelled when we did the last show, so that sort of been cancelled. So that was the last one of the NBC shows, so all four of the things that NBC left on the table at the end of the sort of Friday night blood bath that was usually the cancellations, all four of those shows ended up getting cancelled. Good Girls, apparently they did originally talk about, there was sort of a deal in place for a final shortened season, and they talked to some of the cast about potentially doing a final shortened season, and it sounded like that was going to go ahead, but ultimately they're saying they couldn't get the numbers to work properly for it. Interestingly, there were also some rumours about issues with the contract for Manny Montana, who played Rio on the show. Christina Hendricks, Mae Whitman and Renetta had all agreed to take pay cuts for a reduced 8-episode final season. It apparently has been a bit of an open secret that Montana and Hendricks didn't get on particularly well, which is slightly difficult because they were sort of an on-off couple on the screen. They were apparently very professional on set, but for whatever reason didn't particularly get on very well. And that may have been a factor in Manny Montana not being prepared to take the financial hit. Also, the fact that he's obviously a recurring character, not one of the lead characters, him not being prepared to take take a financial hit for a final season because they were asking all the cast to reduce the amount of money that they got. And, you know, I think there was some suggestion that maybe he didn't want to do that. Although I would stress that this is kind of Hollywood rumours, and it sounds a bit more like a convenient scapegoat for NBC that sort of has leaked out. Because to cancel that show and sort of, they would have been a way, I think, of writing around that character because he isn't one of the main characters. So you could have maybe written him out some way, how, but it sounds like it was just money issues on the show, and for whatever reason they couldn't get it to work, which is a shame.
I know they wouldn't have done it, but I think a lot of people know what I'm going to say. If it was a case where he didn't want to take the pay cuts but the others kind of did, you could have recast him, because then you still would have had the main three women, mm-hmm. recast him and then just kind of go from there. Like, you know, I'm not saying that that's the sole reason that it got cancelled. Obviously it seems like a bit of just a mess overall.
Yeah.
And NBC seems to just kind of cleaned house with a lot of their content. Unfortunately, Zoe and Manifest were part of that as well. But if you've got an actor who's kind of being problematic or whatever, and I'm only going off based of what you've just said and stuff, just recast him and then just kind of try to go from there. But I honestly don't think that option is used enough. Mm-hmm. And it's causing some strange things to happen in Batwoman as well. So,
right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. It just, other than like outside of Good Girls, it just seems like NBC just, because they cancelled, what, five shows or whatever?
Something like that.
Yeah, because it was like Debris, Zoe, Good Girls, Manifest, and I'm sure some others. Just seemed like NBC's just, I don't know what they're doing at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, they have got some new stuff coming on. There's, I think Mr. Mayor is one of their shows, which looks like it may have been picked up over here by Sky. It looks like Young Rock is coming over as well. That looks like it's coming onto Sky Comedy. So there will be some new NBC comedy shows coming across, I think, due to the fact that NBC and Sky have the same parent company. They are more likely to come across onto Sky. But yeah, I know what you mean. There aren't that many things on NBC that I watch either. I think Blacklist I still watch, which is coming back. But yeah. Moving on to renewals. Evil has been renewed for a third season, which airs on Paramount Plus in the US and Alibi in the UK. We haven't had the second season yet. We don't know when that's going to land on Alibi, but yeah, that is still coming. But they've renewed that for a third season. Cruel Summer has been renewed for a second season. That's a Freeform show in the US. It's coming on to Amazon Prime, I think, later this month or next month, but that's a teen drama that's coming across. War of the Worlds been renewed for a third season. That's Epics in the US. That's Star Disney Plus in the UK. Second season, I think, starts this week, and they've renewed that for a third season as well, so I'm glad that's coming back. There's a couple of HBO Max shows, Rutherford Falls and Made for Love, both of which have been renewed for second seasons on HBO Max. Those two haven't been picked up in the UK yet.
I want to see Made for Love.
Yeah.
I watched the trailer for the first season. That looks kind of interesting.
Yes, so. It does. Looks like quite an interesting show, that. So hopefully that means that they will get picked up at some point over here. But they've been renewed for second seasons. I think the most surprising renewal that came out while we're off, Good Omens has been renewed for a second season, which was always billed as a limited thing. There was never really any intention to make a second season out of the gate for this, although I'm very glad they have. I know there are some people complaining because of the fact that obviously there was only one Good Omens book and it goes beyond the original source material, and Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett had talked a bit about doing a second book, and some of the ideas from that second book actually made it into the first season of the show. So they are in very much uncharted territory with this. It is going to focus very much on Michael Sheen and David Tennant's two characters, so the angel and the demon, which I think is great because they're fantastic and very, very watchable together. As you said before, you could sit and just watch an entire show of just them chatting to each other, which is kind of what
which they did,
So that's really great. We're going to be very interesting to see where they go with that. Neil Gaiman is writing the second season alongside a man called John Finnemore. Now, if you don't know the name John Finnemore, you probably don't listen to Radio 4, which is quite understandable. But John Finnemore has a number of shows that he's involved with, the main one being John Finnemore's Sylvanir program, which is a radio show, which is hilariously funny. He pops up on The Now Show, which is a long-running Radio 4 show as well, quite regularly. He's been on the News Quiz. He also pops up in Avenue 5 a couple of times done well. John Finnemore is a wonderfully strange, surreal comedian, entirely the right sort of mind for writing something like this. So if you were going to put anybody in as somebody that I think could work with Neil Gaiman to develop these characters and create an interesting, slightly weird, off-the-wall story, I think these are two people that will work very, very well together. I'm really interested to see what they do with a second season for this. It was one of those things that when I first saw it, you were like, is it safe going beyond the original book? And then I saw John Finnemore was involved in it, like, yeah, actually, I can see that working. So I'm really interested to see what they do with this. That is, of course, Amazon and BBC for that show as well. But yeah, I know you love the first season of this too.
Yeah, me, you and Robert enjoyed it. I think, did Grey watch it? I can't remember.
Can't remember.
The three of us really enjoyed it. I think that was the first podcast that didn't have me on it that was for Entertainment Talk. If you remember, you did that one with Robert. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, it's got David Tennant and Michael Sheen, which is important. And like you said, some of the writers from before as well, which is very, very good. I think Handmaid's Tale's done a similar thing. So I think that there was only one Handmaid's Tale book. And
yes,
that was, I think that was for the first season. And now they're in the fourth season. So and there's a fifth season on the way. So there's a lot of content there. But sometimes some of those things work. I mean, The Walking Dead's kind of a weird one where it sort of does come up with original content and it uses and remixes its comic book content. So those things can be done. It just depends when you start putting original ideas into those things, if they're good enough. So
yeah, as I say, bringing on somebody like John Finnemore to help out Neil Gaiman, I think is a great move. And I think I'd be very interested to see what he comes up with, because he's got a wonderfully weird sense of humour. And I think it fits very much into that Good Omens vibe. So that's going to be really intriguing to see where it goes with that. In terms of pickups and sticking with Terry Pratchett-ish, the BBC has acquired The Watch, which was a BBC America show that is going out on BBC iPlayer. It's on iPlayer right now, actually, and will be going out on BBC Two at some point later on in the year. This is very, very, very loosely based on the characters of The Watch from Terry Pratchett. I know it really upset a bunch of Pratchett fans with how they handled the characters, because it changes them quite a lot from what I'm told. I haven't actually watched it yet, but it is up on iPlayer if you want to go and see The Watch. And for those people, because this always comes up whenever we talk about BBC America, BBC America is not funded by the license fee. It is an entirely commercial entity. It's co-owned by BBC Studios, which is an entirely commercial entity, and AMC as well. They co-own that channel. If something is made by BBC America, it does have to be acquired by the BBC in the UK. Now, they probably get quite a good deal on it because there is a connection between those two companies, but BBC Studios is a commercial entity, which actually helps reduce the license fee because some of the profits that they make go back into the BBC. So the fact that BBC in the UK have acquired it, that's why it's described as acquiring, not just the BBC are airing, because they don't own the BBC America shows. So that is why it's that way. For those people that have missed it, Mayans MC is back for its third season. That's also on iPlayer, and the entire thing's on iPlayer, actually, and it's also airing weekly on BBC Two, so that is back. They've also picked up Gossip Girl, the original CW series, and the new 2021 HBO Max series, which are going to air later this year on iPlayer and BBC One. So if you're a fan of Gossip Girl, you'll be able to watch through the entire original series and also the new kind of continuation spin-off series as well, which has just started airing in the US. So both of those are going to be all, I think it's six seasons of the original show, and the new series are going to be on iPlayer and BBC One. Law and Order Organized Crime, as we kind of hinted at a few weeks ago, that has been picked up by Sky Witness. That is coming on Friday the 30th of July. Officially, they haven't announced that date, but it has to come on Friday the 30th of July, because the opening episode is part two of a crossover with SVU. So it has to go out after that. So 30th of July at 10 9 p.m. That is going out. They've announced the air date for Marvel's What If, which is this animated series which kind of takes a kind of multiverse look, a sort of alt-universe multiverse look at a bunch of the key moments from the MCU, but what if they played out slightly differently? So there is things like Peggy Carter becomes Captain America. There's a whole bunch of different things going on. There is a trailer up on the website for this, but that's landing 11th of August. It looks like it's going to be a really fun series because it has all the original cast back voicing that as well, including Chadwick Boseman voicing for the final time Black Panther. So that is coming.
I'm most looking forward to the Peggy Carter episode. Yeah. I think that's going to be really cool. It'd be great if they could get Hayley back and do something with that character. That would be cool.
Yes, it would be nice if you could get, like, I would love to see another season of that on TV, however they managed to do that. But yeah, that would be good.
You could fit that into the MCU because the Steve Rogers that we know has a relationship with her.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could do a Captain America series with him, you know, living out in that life. That would be a kind of thing that you could do potentially. That would be good. Over on DC, Stargirl Season 2 has an air date. That's also going to be the 11th of August, so they're going up against each other, but there's no reason why you can't watch both. That's on Amazon Prime UK, and it's going out the day after it goes out in the US, so that will be going out weekly this time around by the looks of things.
Do you think that will have breaks? I know it's a HBO Max show, but it's sort of CW, so they're sort of...
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah, they may be a bit sporadic. I don't know. I don't know whether they're going to run that straight out, because it is only, I think, 10 episodes again, so it may even only be 8 episodes, so it's not, maybe we'll run straight through it, not going to have breaks in it, but I don't know. There's another show called Kevin Can F Himself that is coming to Amazon Prime UK on the 27th of August. That's quite an interesting looking one, because the premise of it is, on the surface, it looks like your standard American US family sitcom, in that there is a incompetent husband, long-suffering wife, kids, and that sort of thing. And it's one of those standard US family sitcom setups, multi-camera thing shot in front of a studio audience. However, what they then do is they then follow the wife in a kind of dark, cynical, single camera setup of what it genuinely would be like for the wife living with a sitcom husband like that in real life. So it's this weird mishmash of this kind of multi-camera standard light comedy and this weird, dark, cynical background comedy of what this would be like in reality for her. So it sort of jumps backwards and forwards. I'm really intrigued to see this and see how well it works. But 27th of August on Amazon Prime UK for that. There are trailers kicking around for that if you want to go and see it.
I'm really looking forward to that. I watched the first season because I sort of heard a bit bits and pieces about it. Got Annie Murphy as well from Schitt's Creek. She's a phenomenal actress as well. She's really, really good. I guess this is her next gig because Schitt's Creek is finished now and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, looks different, looks interesting, and it's got her in it as well, which is great. So.
Yeah. So that's called Kevin Can F Himself, and that's coming on the 27th of August to Amazon Prime UK. A few more, rather more advanced air dates. Sex Education Season 3, that's coming to Netflix on the 17th of September. They've announced Foundation, which is the adaptation of the amazing Isaac Asimov novel. That's coming to Apple TV on September 24th. They've announced for that as well. So that one looks really interesting. I'm really looking forward to that landing because that's a big epic sci-fi series. It was, of course, WitcherCon a few days ago as well, which was this virtual online convention, which was quite fun. And it was, I think, a 3-hour video, basically, that they put together of interviews with the cast and crew. And you can go and find that on YouTube. There is also a breakdown of some of the key points on the website if you want to go and check that out. There was a couple of things that came out of that. One was an air date announcement for an anime film called The Witcher Nightmare of the Wolf, which is landing on the 23rd of August. That tells the story of the early life of Geralt's friend and mentor, Vesemir, set long before the two characters meet. That sort of background to Vesemir, who is showing up in the season 2 in live action. Sorry.
Who's playing him in the show?
It's Kim Bodner, who is probably best known in the UK for Killing Eve. He played the sort of older mentor character character to the assassin in Killing Eve. So it's him who's playing it. He's actually a really good pick because he's a great actor, and I think he fits Vesemir very, very well. So I'm really intrigued to see how that works in live action. I don't know whether he's voicing the character in the anime series, because obviously this is a much younger version of the character. So I don't know whether they've used a different person to do the voice for this version, but that's going to be an anime film that's landing on Monday, the 23rd of August for that on Netflix. So that's called Witcher Nightmare of the Wolf. Then they also announced that season two has a premiere date of the 17th of December for season two of The Witcher as well. So those are the key air dates that came out of that. Definitely looking forward to the second season because there's lots of interesting new characters and interesting new story for that. So there's loads of background footage and bits and pieces up on the website if you want to go and check that out. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they didn't talk that much about at WitcherCon was The Witcher Blood Origin, which is this limited prequel series which is set in the world of The Witcher, but it's the creation of the first prototype Witcher and the events that lead up to the conjunction of the spheres when the worlds of monsters and men and elves all get merged into one. So it's set like 12,000 years before the adventures of the main Witcher series. Very much set back in history. They've didn't talk much about that at WitcherCon, but there were a couple of casting announcements for it. Michelle Yeoh, who you all know probably best as Philippa Georgiou from Star Trek Discovery, was also in Crazy Rich Asians, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and a whole bunch of other things. She's next in the Avatar sequels and Shang-Chi as well. She shows up in Marvel. She's playing a character called Cyan, who is the very last of her nomadic tribe of sword elves. Nobody can come close to her with her artistry with a blade, and no one carries as much loss within their heart. When a chance presents itself to retrieve a stolen sacred sword taken from her fallen tribe by nefarious means, she launches herself into a deadly quest that will change the outcome of the continent. That is her character. So it sounds like she's going to be kind of sword-wielding badass, which is just perfect for Michelle Yeoh. That's kind of what she does so well. So I think that's a great bit of casting. They've also announced Sophia Brown is playing Ellie, who is a elite warrior blessed with the voice of a goddess who has left her clan and position as Queen Guardian to follow her heart as a nomadic musician. A grand reckoning on the continent forces her to return to the ways of the blade in her quest for vengeance and redemption. This role was originally going to Jodie Turner-Smith, who is from Night Flyers and The Last Ship. She was originally cast, but had to leave the part due to scheduling conflicts caused by the fact that the shooting schedule was all moved around because of the pandemic. So she had to leave. Sophia Brown, probably most known for things like Gilda Hajj. She was in The Captures. She pops up in Marcella, Guerrilla as well, a whole bunch of other things. So she's been in a load of different TV shows. So I think she's a solid actress to be joining that show as well. The show comes from Declan De Barra, who wrote on The Witcher and The Originals. He's exec producer and showrunner. Lawrence Schmidt-Hisrich, who is The Witcher showrunner and sort of overseer of all things The Witcher, is also exec producer. And the original author is serving as the creative consultant. So it is very much based around his vision of where things should go. So I think this sounds like it could be a great series. It's only 6 episodes. It's a live action series. We don't know exactly when it's going to be landing, but presumably some point next year. But I'm very much looking forward to that. I think, you know, any expansion to the Witcher world gets my vote, I think, definitely.
Yeah, seems like the future is bright for Witcher TV shows on Netflix. Going to be very busy on the 17th because I'm going to try and do another one of those marathon days. Yeah. So that'll be fun. Michelle Yeoh in this show sounds pretty good. I like the ideas for the two other different, these new two spin-offs that we've got as well. So looking good to me.
And I like the fact that they're not trying to spin off huge extended shows. You know, this is very much being pitched as it's 6 episodes, it's a limited series. It tells a bit of background of this particular story. I'd be very happy if they left the main show to do its job and to run through the books. And then they did little background things which are animated or live action just to fill in some backgrounds of this sort of very rich history that they've created in the books. And it would be good just to get some of this stuff on screen in one way or another. So I think it's a lovely way of filling things out without committing to like really long series that have to go on and on. So I think have a main show and then have a bunch of sort of little spin-off things that go around it and are just smaller one-off stuff. I think that's a great way of doing it. Moving over onto AMC, and of course, Home of Zombies is now going to be Home of Vampires. They, a few years ago, picked up the Vampire Chronicles from Anne Rice. They managed to get the rights to the whole of the Vampire Chronicles series, which includes Interview with the Vampire, The Vampire Lestat, Queen of the Damned, The Tale of the Body Thief, all the other books as well. And they also picked up The Mayfair Witches and the crossover novels between the two. So they pretty much have control of all that connected universe of Anne Rice novels. They've now officially confirmed that they are doing Interview with the Vampire series based on the best-selling novels. For those of you that don't know, the novel series Vampire Chronicles consists of 11 books. Starts with Louis, a 18th century French colonial aristocrat who is turned into the world's whiniest vampire by a very charismatic vampire called Lestat. The series continues mainly focusing on Lestat, which I'm sure will upset Louis even more, and he continues on his exploits across the ages. So, I mean, that's the sort of basic setup for it. There was, of course, a film based around this with Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise in the leading roles, and the film was great. I mean, they did a really good job with that movie, despite the fact that some people were a bit upset by Tom Cruise about taking that role. He absolutely nailed it and did a brilliant, brilliant job. So it was really, really good. I'm interested to see how this works in a sort of longer form, and they, of course, have all the books to play with. They are clearly setting this up as something that could at least run alongside The Walking Dead, if not be the replacement for The Walking Dead, I think, moving forward. So they've announced that they're planning various different things in this sort of overall world. They are creating a Vampire Chronicles universe, which is going to use all the 18 titles across The Vampire Chronicles and The Mayfair Witches. Acclaimed award-winning film and television producer Mark Johnson, who's worked on things like Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, Halt and Catch Fire and Rectify, is taking the lead development of creating this sort of franchise and universe for AMC. Roland Jones, who worked on Perry Mason and Friday Night Lights, who also has an overall development deal with AMC Studios, is creator and showrunner of Interview and the exec producer as well. Going to be an 8-episode first season. Anne and Christopher Rice are non-writing executive producers, so Anne Rice and her son Christopher are both involved in this series as well. It's been a long time coming, and it's bounced around from various different places. Originally, Anne had sold all the rights onto a company. She got them all back in 2016. Ever since then, she's been working with her son Christopher to try and find a way of bringing the book back to screen. There was a deal in place with Paramount TV and Anonymous Content, who optioned the books originally, and Brian Fuller was involved in developing the project before he obviously left over creative differences, because it's Brian Fuller, and that's kind of what he does. Then there was another series that landed at Hulu in 2019, and then that stalled, and then AMC eventually acquired the rights to all the books, and this is where we are now. So really looking forward to this, because I think they're a wonderful, rich world to deal with. I don't know whether you've seen any of the other either movies or read any of the books, or do you know anything about this world?
No, I'm not quite so into vampires as I am to like horror and zombies and stuff. If it comes to human-like things that try to eat people, I tend to veer towards zombies. But I mean, the last thing I kind of watched that had vampires was like the Twilight films, I think, which I never did watch the very last one.
No.
I might do that one day. I don't know. Might as well finish it off, I suppose. Just never really been into vampires at all. There's other things I've like considered watching, things like Vampire Diaries, things like I've heard about like What We Do in the Shadows is a bit like that, whatever.
That's a comedy though, really. Okay, I mean, right. So yeah.
But no, just never really, I just don't really seek out vampire stuff. Maybe there's something out there that I would like, but I just tend to look for more. There's still zombie content I haven't seen yet, so I'm just sort of looking for that first, I suppose.
Yeah, I think AMC's a good home for it. I think they proved with The Walking Dead that they have the money to do these things very well. And I think Interview with the Vampire is a solid, well-crafted world in the Anne Rice novels for them to work with and deal with. And I think it will work very well as a series. So I'm quite excited to see this. We don't know exactly when this is going to land, and there's no casting yet, but that will be one to look out for. And we've got one last story which popped up while we were off. The Winchesters, which is a supernatural prequel series, which is in the works at the CW from Jensen and Donnell Eccles. Obviously, Jensen, one of the two main leads as Dean on the main Supernatural show. This, of course, isn't the first time they've tried to do a spin-off, but the premise for this one is before Sam and Dean, there was John and Mary. The Winchesters will be told from the perspective of narrator Dean Winchester, voiced by Jensen in the series. And this is the epic untold love story of how John met Mary and how they put it all on the line, not over to save their love, but their entire world. So it's sort of a background of John and Mary, the parents, is the idea for it. Jensen and his wife are exec producing it through their company, Chaos Machine Productions, under an overall deal with WBTV, who made the original series, who would co-produce. It's been given a script commitment, so it's not like going to definitely go. And, you know, the problem with any supernatural spin-off was they've always said that it doesn't work without the boys involved. This caused a few ructions between Jared and Jensen, because apparently nobody bothered to tell Jared before the announcement, which rather upset him. They apparently have smoothed it all out, and it was a big miscommunication. The news got out that they were working on this. I think it was before they were actually properly planning to announce it, and the news got out about it. It just happened really, really quickly. Jensen hadn't had time to talk to Jared about the fact that they were even considering working on it, and it sounds like it has popped up very, very quickly. It was all kind of fairly hush-hush, but nobody had actually mentioned it to Jared, and he was a bit pissed when he first heard about it, because he heard about it on Twitter by the sounds of it, and there was a few tweets that went out, was like, well, this is interesting, I knew nothing about it, sort of thing. And yeah, there was a few apologetic vocals, I think, between them, but they have smoothed it all out now. But yeah, that was really quite unfortunate how that news came out. But they decided that they are going to move forward with at least trying a script for it. It's being written and produced by Robbie Thompson, who was former co-exec producer of Supernatural, so he is the person that is actually writing it. I mean, it's always interesting to see them try a spin-off for Supernatural, and, you know, they're always going to give it a go. I think the one thing this does have going for it is the fact that it is Jensen Eccles that is directly involved, and I mean, if he can't pull this off, I think that'll be it, because they've tried a couple of times before. There was a show called Supernatural Bloodlines, there was Wayward Sisters, which really, you know, a lot of fans wanted Wayward Sisters to actually go somewhere, and that didn't get picked up. The general consensus from the CW has always been that without the boys it just won't work, but we'll see. So yeah,
so is Jared the one that's doing Walker at the moment?
Yes, Jared.
Okay.
Is
which brother is he?
Jared Padalecki was Sam, he's the one that's now starring Walker for the CW. Jensen Eccles played Dean, and he's the one that he's developing this, and he's just joined his old boss Eric Kripke, who came up with Supernatural, who is now the showrunner on the boys. He's just joined Eric Kripke on the boys for season 3 as Soldier Boy. So they're all sort of working together. But yes, and there are apparently some apologetic phone calls between Jensen and Jared, and Eric as well also apologised for the fact that he kind of retweeted the news and without Jared knowing, because he had no idea that Jared hadn't been told. So
from what I've seen of like the Supernatural community, in that the Wayward Sisters was the one that stuck out as the most interesting. So this is, what was it supposed to be called? The Winchesters is what this one's called.
Yeah.
So that's about the parents. Do people want that?
Well, I mean, the parents have been characters on the show previously.
Okay.
In fact, Jeffrey Dean Morgan was the dad, the older dad on the show. I mean, he did that before he did Walking Dead. So we know the characters of John and Mary, and both of them have been around on the show on and off throughout the entire run. There has been some background of them as younger characters when they've done weird timey-wimey things on Supernatural. So we have seen bits and pieces of their history. So I think it's valid. They were both hunters. So I think it is an area where you could expand a bit more. And it also gives the opportunity to have Dean do the voiceover for it as well, or Jensen as Dean do the voiceover for it. So there is potential there.
Is that their way of, with Dean doing the voiceover, is that supposed to be the way of having one of the boys in there? Because
I think that is the sort of last-ditch attempt to try and get one of them involved in it. I mean, you never know. They might get Jared to come in and do some bits as well, but there seems to be, obviously, Jensen and Jared are very, very much part of that whole SPN family, and, you know, they are not going to turn their back on it. They're all, it seems like everything is smoothed out in terms of miscommunication about the announcement of this. Now, I think it's an interesting one. We'll see whether the script comes to anything. I would be interested to see who they cast as well, because obviously we have had previously people cast in those roles. Whether they use the same actors or whether they recast them is anybody's guess.
The CW's been a bit strange with like spin-offs in recent years. Like, we've had all the failed Supernatural spin-offs. Then we had, like, was it two Arrowverse spin-offs, like Painkiller and Green Arrow and the Canaries? Those both didn't go forward. And then there was supposed to be a 100 prequel spin-off. I can't remember what that was supposed to be called, but that was supposed to happen.
Yeah, that's still alive, I think, that 100 prequel spin-off. It's not dead yet. So.
Right. And then they're doing this instead. So, I don't know. It's strange how they've kind of treated certain spin-offs on that. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
But, so, hey, if like, you know, I won't pretend that I'm a Supernatural fan. I didn't even know which of the boys played which one. So, but if this is something that makes Supernatural fans happy and they like it and the CW likes it, then cool. So, yeah, we'll see.
We'll see anything happens with that. But as I say, I wouldn't pin my hopes on it because the previous ones haven't gone anywhere. So, I mean, if anything's got a chance, it's this one, but who knows? Mm-hmm. So that's all the news we've got for this week. Let's move on to some highlights for next week on TV. Highlights for next week. We kick off with Whiskey Cavalier, which is landing on Alibi on the 14th of July. This, of course, was the show which Lauren Cohen did when she took a break from The Walking Dead. It's her and Scott Foley in the lead roles as two government agents who, after an emotional breakup, are forced to work together as they lead an interagency team of spies who periodically save the world and one another. So it sounds like it could be quite a fun spy show, but that's coming to Alibi. By on the 14th of July at 9 p.m.
It's also got Noah from Walking Dead.
Oh, has it? Okay. Yeah, there you go.
I can't remember the actor's name, but it's him.
Yeah. So that's Whiskey Cavalier, 14th of July at 9 p.m. on Alibi. This Way Up returns for its second season on Channel 4. That's on the 14th of July as well. That's at 10 p.m. That's Ailing's Bees series. Never Have I Ever returns for a second season. That's on Netflix on the 15th of July. Val Helsing returns for its fifth and final season. That's on the 16th of July, and that's the final season of that show. Manifest returns for its third and what looks very much to be its final season now. That's on Sky One on the 16th of July at 9 p.m. That is landing. War of the Worlds returns on a Star on Disney Plus, because of course there is no Fox anymore in the UK. So season two of War of the Worlds comes to Star on the 16th of July, has just been renewed for a third season as well. So I'm glad to have that back, because that looks great. Baptiste, second season of that, the spin-off from The Missing, that is landing on BBC One on the 18th of July at 9 p.m. And then over on ITV, Professor T, which I think is a remake of a Belgian series, but that's Ben Miller and Francis Delatour in that. That's the 18th of July at 9 p.m. for that, and that's called Professor T. And then In Treatment, which returns for a fourth season, but with a brand new cast and new lead, that is on Sky Atlantic on the 19th of July at 9 p.m. for Treatment season 4. And that is everything coming up for the next week on TV. If you want to find more stuff about Matt, where can they find you?
Go to entertainmenttalk.org for our TV, video games, films, and May United podcasts. So check all that out. We're doing, like I said, Monsters at Work. I got Ted Lasso season 2 coming up in a couple of weeks. I did a preview for that. Black Widow and a whole bunch of other things as well. Walking Dead's actually back next month, so we'll be talking about the final season of that. And just a whole bunch of other things as well. I did a podcast at the weekend called Three Batmen and the Flash, looking at the situation over there. Because next year, we will have three different actors on screen as Batman. Two of them in one film and then one in another film. So I talked about that as well. You can also find me on Twitch if you'd like to. eTalkUK on there for all my different streams of video games and stuff. But yeah, entertainmenttalk.org is where you can find all that on the website.
Excellent. So go and check that out. over on entertainmenttalk.org. For Bex, who is still buried under piles of work, she is on twitch.tv/TristaBytes. That's BYTES. You can go and find her over there, streaming daily and various evenings, and hopefully she will be back on the show again soon. For Daryl, you can go and find him at HollywoodNorthNews.net for all those series you love which are shot up in Canada. Go and check out the news over there. And for Grey, you can go and find him on Twitter under Grey the Geek. That's Grey with an A, so go and find and talk to him over there. For us, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.